I'd like to convene this informal meeting of the Education Finance Committee for Friday, December 11th, 2020. Remote hearings to the public are possible thanks to the newly revised House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by the good people of the House Public Information Services. We appreciate their work. To members, members have the contents of for today's meeting in their virtual packets available to them. And for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all of these items in one place, they are attached to the calendar event you have received from Ms. Burt. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. If a member is on their phone and doesn't have access to the raise your hand feature, please email Ms. Burt and she will put your question in the queue. This is the digital equivalent of getting the attention of the chair or the CA during a hearing. An email from your House account with subject line, please recognize, is all that is required if you are on your phone. Ms. Sunderland, the Committee Legislative Assistant, will now take an oral roll of members. We'll be unmuting members now. Please minimize any background noise.
Representative Dabney.
Present.
Representative Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Present.
Representative Bennett is excused. Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative DeMith.
Present.
Representative Detmer is excused. Representative Edelson. Representative Edelson. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Present.
Representative Katiza Watoon.
Here.
Representative Kanesh Padin.
Here.
Representative Marquardt. Representative Marquardt. Representative Murphy.
Representative Marquardt and Representative Murphy are excused.
Representative Murphy is excused. Representative Nornes.
Present.
Representative Pryor. Representative Pryor. Representative Richardson is excused. Representative Sandell. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
I believe I saw Representative Edelson join.
Present.
And Representative Pryor. That is everyone.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sunderland. Members, the items in your folder are as follows: the meeting agenda for today, a copy of the DE amendment we will be hearing informationally. We will not be taking any official action during this meeting as the legislature is not currently in session. The House research summary of the original language contained in reviser number 20-9432, and letters of support from the Minnesota Independent School Forum, the Minnesota School Boards Association, and Ed Allies. All of these items are also posted on the committee webpage in an OCR compatible format. Are there any questions before we get started? C- Seeing none, I would like to hand the virtual gavel over to Representative Sandstead, Vice Chair of the Committee. Thank you, Ms. Representative Sandstead.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our committee, and it's good to see all of you again. Chair Dabney, would you like to begin by making any opening comments related to the DE amendment we have before us?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this This proposal extends the deadline by which school districts must certify to the Department of Education the signature signed forms they have from families identifying that they qualify for either free or reduced meal services through the school. This isn't a normal year. Maybe this is the first or the last, the first of the new term or the last of this term. Responses to the COVID-19 pandemic and its impact on our schools. In a normal year, the deadline for filing these forms and notifying the Department of Education would be coming up very quickly here, and school districts would have had plenty of access to children and their families to secure the signatures. This year, with so much distance learning, hybrid changes in structures, it's been more challenging for some school districts to access families, have the conversation with them about the importance of signing these forms and getting the forms signed. The goal of this legislation then is to extend that deadline to January 4th to allow them to connect with families, report that data in to MDE. The importance of this data is that this is the sole measure that we use in determining compensatory education funding for schools. That compensatory education funding is received by every school district, every school district in the state, as well as many of our charter schools, if not all, and goes to support the education of our lowest income students. It's a valuable part of our education formula. This allows schools and districts to make sure that they've got as full and accurate a data reported to MDE as possible. Also in the DE amendment is language that stipulates in plain English that if Minnesota receives federal aid to cover these expenses, that federal aid will first backfill the expense related, projected to be related to this extension of this deadline. I'll let the department speak to the cost estimates that they've provided. We've asked for a fiscal note. That's still in process, but we have a cost estimate from the department. With that, Madam Chair, I believe we have some testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand you do have testifiers, and it looks like Mr. Adosh Uni from the Department of Education is the first testifier. Welcome, Mr. Uni, and please proceed with your comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Adosh Uni. I am the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education here. And my apologies, my camera all of a sudden started to not work. The first time that happens to me ever, and it's during the hearing. And I even wore a suit coat today, so this is doubly hit by that. Madam Chair, again, thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. The MDE is supportive of this effort. We recently heard from districts, as Representative Dabney had explained, that they needed extra time, or extra time would be really beneficial for them to determine which families were eligible, the families they hadn't gotten a hold of yet. And so the solution in this bill really does achieve the extra time that they would need while still honoring some of the deadlines that we would have for collecting that data. And my colleague, Ms. Yetter, will go into detail about those as well. So again, I just want to say we support the main effort, and it's definitely in section one for allowing for this extra time. I believe MDE staff meeting with committee staff and MMB are still having some conversations about the implications in section two, but MDE is very supportive of the main thrust of the bill. And with that, I can turn it back over to you or to my colleague, Ms. Yetter.
Thank you very much. Dr. Yetter, Welcome to the committee, and please proceed with your comments.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in front of you today, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Terry Yetter. I'm the current school finance director at the Department of Education. And I'm here to provide you some additional information with the free and reduced price meal data collection, and then the implications that we have for the revenues, particularly compensatory revenue. Minnesota Statute 126.05, Subdivision 16, gives school districts until December 15th to determine each student's eligibility for the free and reduced price program. This bill provides schools an extension to January 4th, as we've heard, and this allows for collecting these household income statements to determine the eligibility, or some additional time to collect the statements. Districts and charter schools report their free and reduced price meal data on their fall MARS data collection, which is an individual student by student count of students on October 1st. There's two ways that the districts and charter schools can determine eligibility for free and reduced price meals. The first one is direct certification. This is where DHS provides monthly files to our department. The files that are provided are looking at eligibility for programs that DHS administers between July 1 and July 15th. That's the eligibility dates. And we compare that to our MARS enrollment records. And if the student's name and birth date matches closely between the two files, and the student has not already been reported as eligible for free for the free meal program, then basically a MARS warning message is generated. And what that does is alerts the district that rather than needing to collect that form, they can go through the direct certification process and code that student as being eligible for free meals on the data collection. The second method is the forms that we're talking about today with the legislation. These are applications that are completed by the families. Students who cannot be directly certified can be determined eligible by the family completing one or two different household income statements. Either application is acceptable for compensatory revenue and MARS reporting purposes. The first one, the application for educational benefits, this is a form that is provided by Food and Nutrition Services. This shows the eligible students to receive a free or reduced priced meal, and the student is reported on MARS for compensatory revenue purposes. So this is the form that's used if the family and the student are applying for free or reduced price actual meals that they receive through their school. The Alternative Act application is a form that uses the same household income, but it excludes references to meals. And so this is a form that's used by schools that either don't have a meal program or are through several provisions of community eligibility where all students are eligible for free meals, so they don't need to have, each student doesn't need to have that eligibility to receive meals. So the students from these schools, since they already receive free meals, they use this alternative form, and that helps to avoid confusion for the families. The number of returned household income statements for students who cannot be directly certified is reduced this year for a couple of reasons, which you've already heard from Chairman Dabney. First, the students are already receiving free meals under the federal program. So families, many of the families, most families don't have an immediate need to complete the form for the meal programs. So, and they may not be aware that there's a financial benefit to the school district for going ahead and submitting that information to their schools. And then the second one is the exchange of paperwork may have been made more difficult by the distance learning programs. and schools could use more time to educate their families about the need for these applications. We have done some additional outreach this fall to try to help districts with working with their families to try to get as good of data collection as we can. But we know that that a lot of these efforts have been providing kind of limited responses, if you will. So this then gives students or gives the families some additional time to return the forms, and it gives the schools additional time to try to reach out to those families to do that. Now, this change, this allows for a longer window of eligibility. So this would be when the forms that are submitted by the families are certified. There is still the same reporting deadline to the Department of Education of January 7th. So basically, we would have been looking at eligibility in terms of the forms needing to be certified and signed by the families by December 15th. That date is the window, the extension to January 4th. But the date for the districts actually submitting their revised MARS data remains at the January 7th deadline for us. What this does is it allows the proposal, gives the districts more time to collect the information from the families. But what it does not do is change that January 7th reporting deadline to the department. So what that means in terms for the department is we'll still be able to maintain our current schedule of editing, summarizing, and publishing this information. And so this should cause no delays in fall enrollment data being made available both for requesters and then also for our use in our February budget forecast. So the implications for revenues with this change, the October 1 enrollment and the free and reduced price meal data are used to calculate primarily the compensatory revenue for each school district. This would be for next school year, FY22. The higher concentration of eligible students, the higher the concentration, the more state aid is generated for each eligible student. And the compensatory revenue is a component of general education revenue. So that would be an impact on the general education aid appropriation. Fewer households have provided the necessary applications this year. And as we've reported in our November forecast, we are expecting compensatory revenue to be down from what we had projected in last February's forecast. A rough estimate of the potential impact to next year's compensatory revenue was made based on the enrollment counts that came in from last year's reporting, from the last 2 weeks of the reporting period for the year. And during that period, enrollment increased by 555 students. And that indicates both that the districts were still trying to get the October 1 enrollment records accurate on their MARS data, their MARS database in that December period. And then it also would indicate additional students that were added. The number of eligible free meals increased 1,245 during that two-week period, and the number of eligible for reduced price meals increased 459 students. Based just on our modeling of the actual compensatory revenue calculation for each school site for FY21 that data was used for, if you remove those students from the calculation, that would have represented roughly about $4.8 million in the compensatory revenue that we calculated for the entitlements for FY21. That is against the total $546 million in compensatory revenue final entitlements for FY21. Given that the extension would encompass the holiday closure period, This may have an impact on the collection of applications, but we do feel that there is still benefit to the districts to allow them the additional opportunity to collect these forms. Then there's a couple of other funding programs that I wanted to just briefly touch on. The count of students eligible for free and reduced price meals is also a factor in the pupil-based formula used to calculate initial special education aid. The aid for most districts, though, is based on one of the two expenditure-driven formulas that becomes part of that calculation. So expenditures rather than the student data is also the basis for the special education excess cost aid and also becomes the basis for the hold harmless calculation for special ed revenue. And so the special education funding, even though it does use the free and reduced price eligibility for student counts, there's much less reliance on this data for the special ed program than there is for compensatory revenue. And then also, while the collection of these forms also determines the free and reduced price meal charges for many students, these forms can be collected for the actual meal price eligibility. The forms can be collected anytime throughout the school year for the nutrition purposes. And so the eligibility deadline doesn't apply to the funding for the nutrition program. So the primary impact is going to be to the compensatory revenue program with some much lesser impacts to special education aid. And we don't see impacts to the nutrition programs. That concludes my remarks. And I'd be happy to respond to questions if there are any.
Dr. Yetter, thank you very much for your comments and that testimony. At this time, members, I'm going to see if there are questions from any of our staff or our members. And if you do have a question, it might be best to use the raise your hand function or maybe just do something in the video screen as I scroll through. Okay, I scrolled through quickly. I did not see anybody. I apologize if there is somebody that I've missed. Just either flag me, get my attention somehow. At this time, we will proceed with other... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Rep Stanzett, I see that Rep Kreisha has a question.
I apologize. Rep Kreisha, please proceed.
I do, and I just wanted to make sure I got on the list for closing comments. So that's all I have.
I have you on the list. Okay, at this time, it looks like we have other testifiers that are with us. David Law, superintendent of the Anoka-Hennepin School, is with us. And welcome to our committee. Please go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Sandsteed. And I just want to thank you all for pulling together this afternoon. This is a really important topic for Minnesota school districts. I'm here testifying on behalf of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and the Anoka-Hennepin School District. And I'll try to be brief. I have a couple great graphics to show. Sarah said I could post my screen. Sarah, our representative, is it still okay if I share my screen?
That's fine by me if you have the technology to do that.
I'll give it a try. Representative Sanseed, I can see you. Can you see this clearly?
I can.
Okay. Representatives, this is all 37 of the Anoka-Hennepin school districts, and across the bottom is the percentage of students that qualify for free and reduced the year before. And up the side is the percentage of students that have opted to be in distance learning. And I show this to you because I want you to see there's a direct correlation that the higher the poverty level, the more likely families were to participate in distance learning. That creates a barrier for us because they aren't on site for us to work with families to get paperwork turned in. And then on top of that, arguably distance learning is significantly less beneficial than in-person learning. I've been identified two of our highest sites in terms of participation in free and reduced learning and the projected deficit in compensatory education at those sites based on our current free and reduced counts. At Evergreen Park, our highest poverty school, based on the number of families that have turned in paperwork, we're going to be short over $275,000 in compensatory education next year. As a superintendent, this is a concern to me because these students are going to come back with high need, and we're going to have four fewer teachers in that building to support them next year. Now, one hypothesis would be, amazingly, Evergreen Park parents have risen out of poverty during the pandemic. I don't believe that to be true. The other likely solution is there's been a disconnect between getting paperwork into school and these students are going to struggle. Your hearing today is about offering flexibility for this group of students, and this is the tip of the iceberg. We're committed to getting more paperwork in over the next few weeks, but we're looking at this deficit for next year. I'm going to scroll down on this page. I will point out that across our district, based on the percentage of students that have not turned in forms this year that would have typically turned in forms, we're going to be short. You know, you can see from highest poverty going down, multiple three or four teachers per site at our neediest sites, 2 million at the elementary. This is based on money that we would have gotten this year or last year, but aren't projected to get next year. And 900,000 at the middle school and 700,000 at the high school. So I share this with you to show you the need that when we come back next fall, we will have these students back in our buildings. They'll have need, and we won't have the same resources that we have this year or year in years past. I will show you one other thing. We've made double the effort to communicate with families. One of the graphics we sent out was this page that shows what your free and reduced form gets you. It's more than just school meals. It's help with standardized testing. It's help with things like Comcast Internet or SNAP. It's help with high school athletics and other high school activities, and more benefits like energy assistance and bus fares. So we've been communicating with families about the comprehensive support that those families get. I just wanted to put this on your radar, exactly what the impact is going to be for students that are with us. But this disconnect in paperwork is going to set them up for a challenge next year. And I appreciate you taking the chance to listen to me this afternoon.
Thank you very, very much for that. My apologies to Representative Kunesh. It looks like you had a question and I missed your hand. So I apologize. Representative, if you're ready, go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Stanstead. I was just going back to the earlier conversation where we it was shared that that free and reduced status within a school also is connected to other services such as special ed and some of those. And so my question is, was at that time, what other uses is that status used for within a school district to either access unique resources or for other sort of status issues within a school district?
Superintendent, do you want to take that one?
Sure. We specifically, along with meals, those families may be eligible for discounted fees for academic tests, labs in school. We use it to provide Wi-Fi to families currently through Comcast or other providers and allocate hotspots. We're also using it to help pay. You know, we know that kids that are connected to co-curriculars are much more likely to be connected to school and be successful. So we, with the State High School League's help, we offer reduced or free participation in both athletics and other co-curriculars. And then on top of that, our partners like Xcel Energy help those families get support for things in their at their residence. So all of that can come from that form.
Thank you. That's good to know that there are a lot of those resources and agencies and businesses that are there to help our students and families. Thank you much.
Representative Kunesh, any other follow-up on that?
No, thank you.
Very good. Representative Hewitt, you have a question.
Kind of going off what Representative Kunis Podin was going on. I know personally from youth activities that I've been involved with in the community level that I couldn't understand how this was used, if it was confidential or not, but we use that same criteria to basically give free scholarships away to the youth athletes. Is this stuff confidential, or is there a conduit that programs like that can use? I don't know if it was done legally or right or not, but I'm kind of curious because I think it's a great system. It definitely does the vetting these institutions need, but is there a conduit that's can used, or is this not considered confidential information?
Superintendent?
I would say it's extremely confidential. We can take information that community providers are offering to families and reach out to families that qualify and let them know it's available. So rather than giving you a list of students who would qualify, we can let families who qualify know it's available, and that maintains it confidentially. Those people who take advantage of it are doing it at their choice, and we're not sharing their data, if that helps.
Okay, and I don't know which way it came into the group I was affiliated with, but I know we used it. And so I think that's great if you can let the families know that these are services available to them, and it's good to hear it's confidential. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, I'm just going to double check to see if there are any other members who have questions. If you do, please use the raise your hand function, and I will scan through that. Rep. Kunish, it looks like you have another question. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to respond to Representative Hewitt and the superintendents, as an example, I can share. So this fall, I started back to school as my library media specialist position, and our school district provides sort of a technology damage insurance program if families want to subscribe to that for their Chromebooks, if there's any damage or loss or that sort of thing, accidental damage. And for our free and reduced students, there is a reduced rate for the family. So if you have, you know, 2, 3, 4, or 5 kids in a school district, that could get pretty expensive. But if you're on a free and reduced waiver, it's reduced from the original cost. I, as a library media specialist, do not know who those students are. Our district has created a like an online payment system where the parents can go into the parent portal and they can pay for all the different activities or fines or fees or whatever it is. And when if they have that free and reduced status, then when they go in to make those payments, it automatically shows that reduced rate. And so in that way, the privacy of the family is very secure. We never know who is at that, who is receiving that kind of reduction. And I kind of appreciate not knowing all that information. I can see a lot of information, but those are some of the things that I think is important to keep confident. And if it's one thing that this COVID has done, it's allowed us to become more efficient and have a lot more of these software issues so that families do have that privacy. I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Sandell, I see you have your hand up. And then just a reminder, when you're done, we have to be mindful of our time and we'll move on from there. Rep. Sandell.
Quickly, thank you, Chair and Dr. Yetter and Superintendent Law. Well, we're talking about significant amounts of money here. And I wonder where we'll look to support that program. Will it come out of general funds? Will it be part of the request for the education finance budget as we go forward in this new session?
I will let either the superintendent or Dr. Yetter answer that one.
I'll leave it to Dr. Yetter first, please.
Representative, the increased cost here really represents a portion of the reduction in compensatory revenue that we're anticipating through our forecast for FY22. As part of the general education revenue appropriation, that would be part of the state general fund. And I, how that gets funded is, I think really becomes, you know, without any specific language, it would be coming basically an adjustment to that general education open and standing appropriation.
Thanks very much. I certainly appreciate I certainly appreciate the information, and I want to do what I can to support the request. Thanks. Thank you, Chair.
Very good. At this time, it looks like we have Tim Strom.
Madam Chair, I was just going to add for Representative Sandell that regardless of whether that amount is built into the November budget and was overestimated or is taken out of the February budget and underestimated, the way that this committee will be tracking that will be essentially on the basis of the cost that MDE thinks that it will, that those extra couple of weeks will provide. But in terms of where that money will show up next session, as it were, it's essentially whether if it passes now, the February forecast will reflect that different level of compensatory. So measuring from the starting place, which you will, once you make your decisions next spring, will really key off of the February forecast. And that will be base in terms of your spending for then. But for purposes of your actions today, essentially the estimate we have from MDE is the one that will be carried as the cost, as it were, of this provision.
Thank you, Tim.
Mr. Strom, you're always very helpful. Thank you for that. At this time, we're going to go ahead and move on. And our next testifier is Leah Gardner. She is the Public Policy Director for Hunger Solutions Minnesota. Welcome to the committee, and please proceed.
Thank you. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Leah Gardner. I'm Policy Director at Hunger Solutions Minnesota. I'm here today to testify in support of the legislation to extend the deadline for school districts determining student eligibility for free and reduced price meals. Even in the best of times, free and reduced price school meals are a lifeline for families. With more than one in three children in Minnesota relying on this program to have the nourishment necessary to succeed in school. But these are not the best of times. We're currently seeing unprecedented levels of need. With 16% of Minnesotans experiencing food insecurity, according to recent Census Pulse survey data, and nearly double that rate for communities of color. In these times of economic hardship, schools remain a critical access point for families in need of food. In addition to being tied to compensatory revenue calculations, the free and reduced price meal program serves as a critical access point for families to receive pandemic EBT benefits, which are emergency cash assistance benefits designated to replace missed school meals. Now is a critical time for all of us to make a concerted effort to ensure those eligible get enrolled in the free and reduced price meal program. I thank you very much for taking the time to address this today.
Thank you very much. Our next testifier is Brad Lundell, Executive Director, Schools for Equity in Education.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. I think it's, the author summed up kind of situation in his opening comments. This has been a year like no others, and I think that it's unprecedented times, and when we're in unprecedented times, we sometimes have to make adjustments. I think what I can echo the comments of both Superintendent Law and Ms. Gardner. I think that the this will allow districts to provide the state with more accurate description of where they're at right now. And of course, that's going to be very, very important. And as we see, as Ms. Gardner has talked about, with the economic downturn, there may be a number of families that are eligible for the free and reduced price lunch that did not ordinarily not have seen themselves as eligible. So that school district outreach to those families, I think, is increasingly important in these very unprecedented times. And I've used the word unprecedented an unprecedented number of times during my testimony, and I apologize for that. But again, thank you for testifying. Again, I would stress with Schools for Equity and Education, we're a statewide organization, and this is something that all of our members would find very helpful as they channel these very difficult times. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those comments. We have one more testifier that I have on my list, Ryan Vernash, principal of Maxfield Elementary, part of the St. Paul School District. Welcome to the committee and please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of this effort for an extension to the free and reduced lunch application form. I am Ryan Vernash. I'm the proud principal of Maxfield Elementary and St. Paul Public Schools. And our school is located in the Rondo neighborhood, so not too far down the road from the Capitol. We are a school that serves students that are 65% Black, 13% multiracial, 8% Hispanic, 8% Asian, 5% white. About 25% of our students experience homelessness every year, and over 90% of our students typically qualify for a free and reduced lunch indicator of experiencing poverty. I share these statistics to emphasize that based on what we know of the pandemic, that our families are disproportionately impacted by COVID. We have families who've lost loved ones, who are long haulers, who have shared incredible stories with me of heartbreak and resilience. And the impact has been life-altering for so many of the families we serve. I also share this because it highlights our resilience or our reliance on compensatory dollars to provide key educational services. At our school, about 35% of our total school budget comes from CompEd. Currently, we have 58 lunch forms that we're still trying to get completed, and we're making a little bit of progress each day. If we don't get those 58 forms, that may lead up to a 30% reduction in our CompEd revenue. That kind of reduction, simply put, would be catastrophic in our ability to serve our students and families. If we're faced with those types of cuts, we're at risk of losing a teacher, our attendance clerk, teaching assistants, our student support lead. Yeah, some of the work that we do in terms of trauma-informed instruction, restorative practices, all these services. And these are services and positions that are vital to our wraparound supports that help the academic and social emotional achievement of our kids. And it's going to be more important than ever coming out of COVID. Giving us a little bit more time as a school, as a district, as a state would be greatly appreciated. Our community partners, we're all putting in countless hours trying to help our families. There's lots of barriers that we all know that make this time unique, inequitable broadband access, high mobility rates, deactivated phone lines, families in hospitals, just to name a few. And we're using every strategy in our toolbox to get connected with our highly mobile and homeless families who are all over the metro area. We're doing socially distanced home visits using our community elder council, our teachers, TAs, nurse, it's all hands on deck. So the pandemic, we all know, has wreaked havoc on all of our families. And so even this extension of just a few weeks will help us dramatically get more forms completed in and help us at a very local level at Maxfield continue the exceptional experience that our kids and families are accustomed to and quite frankly have a right to. So I appreciate your time and the opportunity to share just a few thoughts and to your consideration of this of these efforts to extend the deadline.
Thank you very much for those comments. And for members and staff, I should have mentioned that Mr. Vernash is a former Teacher of the Year. So we appreciate that very much. I don't have any other testifiers on my list at this time. So it would be appropriate now to go to final comments and questions. So I will ask members and staff if there's any questions or comments. I'm looking for the raise your hand function to see if any hands are raised. Representative Kreisha, do you have any questions at this time, comments?
No, I'll do the final comments from over here. I mean, certainly this is an easy ask. I understand the importance and whatever positive impact it has. And if we get more applications in, I hope that happens. Just from providing feedback to the Department of Education, since you're here and we have your ear, I would hope that we could also start to see a little bit more information about what the yields are in academic progress and what we're seeing in truancy rates and how that's impacting. I think that information will be very helpful. I know the media right now is jumping on a lot of the stories about where kids are at and their grades. I would hope that we can start to see some of those reports coming out of the Department of Education so that we can react to that and not be responding to what's happening in the media. So that's going to be very important as we move forward to January. But what we have in front of us, happy to support this. It's frankly a small ask. We've always been struggling to get applications in, and this is certainly exaggerated that a little bit. But thank you for bringing it forward. Let's get this done, and then let's move on to some of the harder issues we're going to have to talk about around the academic yields around distance learning, truancy rates. And as the superintendents have said, their worries about some of the kids that are on the margins, that are always in the margins, that are going to be in more difficult situation. The last thing that I would just like to relay, I've had a number of meetings with superintendents. The Department of Education, just to let you know, many of the superintendents feel like they're not getting a full seat at the table, and that a lot of their comments, they're not able to fully participate and offer what's happening in their schools, and they just feel frustrated. I think that's part of what's happening with the pandemic we have, but I just wanted to relay that there's a lot of frustration where the superintendents are feeling like they don't have a full voice, and if that can be rectified or if we can open up those lines of communication, I think that would be certainly appreciated. So that's what I have. Thank you, Representative Dabney, for bringing this forward, and I look forward to seeing this pass Monday.
Very good. Thank you, Representative. At this time, Chair Dabney, I will turn it over to you for closing comments. And in your closing comments, perhaps you can maybe mention some of the process of what's next.
There we go. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And first, thank you to the testifiers for participating today and shedding further light and expanding on the importance of this provision. Thank you also to Representative Crescia. We've had a number of back and forths this week, both by email and by phone, as this bill has evolved and come to light. And I appreciate how good he has been to work with this week on this provision and sharing the importance and the value to it. Looking forward, this bill will be introduced Monday, or this provision will be introduced as a bill Monday. And if everything works, we'll be heard on the floor at that time. Senator Nelson and I have worked on this as well, so I'm optimistic that we will have, if we don't already, the 5 points agreement between the four major caucuses and the administration in support of this. I think the testifiers have done a better job than I on illustrating the importance of this provision and the importance not just in terms of access to free and reduced price lunches and compensatory education funding, but to other benefits for these families that are in particular the opportunities that they provide them that are needed. Particularly as we struggle as a state and as a nation economically, making sure that we've got provisions to support children and families who are most hit by this current pandemic is a key responsibility of ours. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney, at this time, I am going to turn the gavel back to you, and thank you for the opportunity to have chaired this portion of the meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, we will be closing out here very shortly. I do want to remark that we've got several members who, for whom this is their last meeting of the Education Finance Committee, whether they're retiring or moving on to that other body. But I want to thank all of you for your service, but particularly those members who are moving on to other places, whether that's a fishing boat or a desk in a different place. Thank you for your service to this institution of the state of Minnesota. Thank you to the members. Thank you to the staff who've supported this process these 2 years and this hearing. And then members, we're in that wonderful winter holiday time of year. Our Hindu constituents recently commemorated Diwali. Hanukkah, of course, started last night. The solstice is coming up, and there's a special astronomical experience, first in 600 years, that I believe aligns with the solstice this year. Christmas, Kwanzaa, New Year's, it's a wonderful time of year. And I wish you all the best to members, to staff, and to the public, whatever holidays you may celebrate or mark, wishing you all the best in these times. Madam Chair, members, thank you. With that, we are adjourned.